What's up, everybody? I've got my longtime friend South Cox on again for the second time on this specific podcast. We screwed something up on the audio on the first one, but we are going to talk about the ass whooping that we received for our 2023 elk hunt. What's up, South? How are you?
Not much. I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. That was a class 10 spanking that we got, I think.
Yeah. But I don't know that we can make the first podcast any better or worse. It's been a minute since we recorded it. And I'm blaming you this time. I think we were trying to do video and audio. Something was going on with your video, and then it didn't record anything on my end. I don't know if that was my fault or yours, but weren't you having... We couldn't get the video to work, so we went to audio on Skype, if I remember right.
Could have been, yeah. You know, it's funny, as I just did a conference call. I'm going on a turkey, javelina, and Gould. So Gould's turkey, javelina, and hog hunt down in Mexico next month. And I was doing a conference call with the outfitter I'm going with down there, and I couldn't get my video to work on my Skype, so... could be something technical wrong with my setup there.
Yeah, who knows? But before we get going too much, I need to remind you that I need, and I'm telling you this now because my memory sucks with everything I've got going on, I may need a heavier 60-ish pound bow. So let's talk about that when we get finished for the parameters of my next adventure. But The hunt, though, as most people know, South and I have hunted this a few different times with pretty dang good success. I've shot one real big bull in there. South, you've shot a few, but, I mean, for people that haven't listened in before, like, talk about that. Talk about some of the animals that the elk that you've taken out of there and the videos you've had people can take a look at, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of videos up on my YouTube channel, on the Stalker Stickbows YouTube channel, and actually all the elk content on that channel has come from this area that we're hunting, or near, you know, either right there or near it, but in the same unit. And I've had a couple exceptionally close calls with bulls as far as, shot distance measured under 10 feet. And it's a draw unit in Colorado, kind of a high points draw unit that I cashed in points the first time I hunted it, and then spent an exhaustive effort and found a guy that I was able to get landowner vouchers from. And so that's how we've been able to repeatedly, return and hunt it. It's a unit that's got a lot of bulls, but not necessarily, really big bulls. So it's kind of ideal, really, for a stick bow, in that you get generally, not this last year, but generally speaking, you get it, more opportunities than necessarily, opportunities at giant bulls, which you might get in some other units, or some other units in other states where it's kind of a high point unit to draw. That's typically the way it is. You'll hear lots of bulls bugling, and see quite a few bulls. The problem that we ran into in particular last year, at least speaking for myself, is just, it's always been kind of a tough unit from a wind standpoint. It really swirls a lot. And there are typically in the morning, like that first half hour or so before the sun hits the hillsides and starts warming up the thermals, usually you can get a pretty consistent thermal. And then maybe, if you're lucky, the last half hour or so of daylight, you can get decent thermals, but it gets pretty hard to thread the needle with trying to put together an opportunity in those, very specific timelines there. And so the rest of the time you spend, responding to bugles, trying to close the distance. And then, within a 60-second time period at any given point along that, the wind will usually be blowing from four different directions. And and it seemed like it was especially bad last year. I know that we spent, I don't remember what is close to 10 days out there, and I don't think we got a bull on camera the whole time. I got one or two on my GoPro when I kind of went in solo aggressively and fast, but we had Levi Mayfield in there filming for me, and you had Steve and Don there filming for you, and I don't know about you guys, but we never got a bull on camera with Levi. It was exasperating.
Today I wanted to talk about the Hoyt RX8 Ultra. This bow is so badass, animals will flip over dead in front of you with no effort whatsoever. You also could potentially pack on 20 to 30 pounds of muscle just from purchasing this bow. If you don't believe me, look at Evan Williams. He works for Hoyt, and he used to be 5'4" and 135 pounds. Now, 3 inches in height and at least 220 pounds of solid muscle. So check out the Hoyt RX8 Ultra at Hoyt.com. Let's talk about the SIG Zulu 6 image stabilizing binoculars. These things really excel when you're road hunting on a road with big potholes and can't really lock into the animal. And above and beyond that, if you're in a tree stand, giant deer's coming in, you're shaking like a dog shitting peach pits, they will lock in on that animal much better than standard binoculars. So check those out, the SIG Zulu 6. Can't recommend them enough. I'm sure some of you have heard me talk about Thor, my rifle from Viking Armament. I cannot suggest this rifle enough. I have actually never cleaned it, and it very rarely misses. Now, I can't promise that with some clients borrowing it. It doesn't have the mojo for everyone, but I would say it's got the 90% mojo. So hopefully if you come down hunting with me, you borrow the rifle, you might be in that 90%, but you could be in the 10s. So I suggest you actually get your own. So go to VikingArmament.com, get one ordered up. 300 PRC is on the way for me. Great guns, great people. As most of you know, I'm super close friends with the people over at Montana Knife Company, especially Josh Smith, the owner of Montana Knife. I was fortunate enough to partner up with them on the Jackstone knife. That knife is kind of a Canadian belt knife with a few different modifications, but a great knife. The good thing about that knife is if you don't ever kill anything, you will still look good with that on your belt. So that's an added bonus. So head over to Montana Knife, check it out, the Jackstone, or one of their other knives that'll certainly help you pick up chicks, possibly, and definitely help you gain a few pounds in the gym. No, not in close distance. Obviously, in that area where we were kind of, you know, across canyon, 200 meters, 200 yards, whatever. We had a little bit there, and then, I don't know that we did other than that. I mean, I got a couple shots. Bad circumstances, but we did get a raghorn that we didn't even know was coming that scared the crap out of us from behind. So I guess we did get one 3x4 on film. So I lied. We did get that. But it was a weird year for sure. And I mean, the year before was pretty insane, or at least the first 4 or 5 days that I was there. But you know, I've heard from people that, you know, the season was bad kind of as a whole in Colorado. Obviously maybe not unit wide or state, you know, unit to unit wide, but the wind was really bad. The pressure was much worse this year than we've experienced before. And I don't know if you want to, you know, touch on that at all, but the pressure was not good.
Yeah. So I've made some contacts, with a couple guys that live down there in that unit. And one guy, that I know, he had reached out to me like that first week of the season, and he was glassing for sheep. He's a guide down there, and he was trying to find a ram for a hunter that he had, and he was glassing in that canyon that we were hunting, and said he saw 7 Amish guys come down into the canyon right near where we camped with a dozen horses. That first weekend of the season, and I don't know how long they stayed for, but they were in there for a while. And then there was a guy from Tennessee that we've bumped into, the last, I think, 3 years now. He's been in there every year. And so he was in there, overlapping the time that we were in. The previous 2 years, he had tagged out right before we got in, and we saw his camp, and he was, you know, in the process of packing his bull out. And then additionally, it was kind of funny, actually. The first week, I think it was, of the season, I got a message on Instagram, and a guy holding one of my arrows, and he's like, "Is this yours?"
Yeah.
It's kind of embarrassing because I've left arrows all over the country in there. And I was like, "Yeah, great. Where are you at?" And turns out he was in, you know, the unit that, because I wasn't sure. It's like, at first, like, okay, is this from where I mule deer hunt or where I elk hunt? And then quickly realized it was where I elk hunt there. And he had found one of my arrows. So he was in there the first week and then came back out and then went back in right before we got there, and actually ended up killing a bull the evening before we packed in. And he was on that same hillside that you were hunting quite a bit, in that same canyon. So there, you know, there'd been a lot of hunting pressure in there prior to us showing up. So it really kind of had things stirred up, and we bumped into that guy actually from Tennessee while we were in the field hunting there one of those days. And fortunately it was towards the, you know, the end where he was having to pack out, but that was several days into our hunt. So there's a lot of overlapping hunting pressure that we really hadn't run into in years past there.
No. And the spot I'm going, and I was physically kind of beat up a little bit, not too bad, but knees were a little bit sore, and I was a little bit whooped when we got in on the hunt. And that spot that I kind of started going to or like sucks to get there every morning. I'm not going to lie. And I don't know what the climb, I mean, you've climbed up there a ton too, but you know, hitting that every morning after like the third or fourth day, I was like, man, this is rough. I mean, I say that it's always fun hunting and elk are screaming, but you know, when the wind's really bad, that climb up there's pretty rough when they're kind of call shy. Yeah. It got to be kind of a mental, just a kick in the ding ding. Horrible.
Yeah. I think you're understating. Yeah. What, 6 weeks of a 5-round fight up there in British Columbia, come back, recoup for a few days, and then head back into that wilderness hunt. So, I mean, to say you're beat up, I think is downplaying it quite a bit.
Yeah, I know. If there was a trying award, you definitely beat me on the elk hunt, because there's a couple times I'm just like, shit, he's getting up at 4:30. I think I'm just going to go ahead and sleep for a while, and I'll go out later, because I was like, yeah, I was getting whooped. But you, that area, there was a couple times, and I mean, we had some videos, made jokes about it, but like, Stephen and I would be on one side of the canyon, and then and Levi would be on the other. And, it's a really good spot. It is. I mean, you could probably kill an elk without killing yourself, but it would be, those elk are pretty smart. They don't hang around down low very often. They do, but it just doesn't, you pretty much are climbing. And that one area you went a couple times, I hiked up there once, and that was horrible.
Yeah, it's not a fun hike from camp. It's the spot that you're talking about. It's, you know, we're camped in the bottom next to the creek, and it's all the way at the top of the ridge. There's kind of a hanging basin that the end of it spills out into the canyon that we're camped in. And I don't remember exactly how much elevation gained it is, but it's well over 1,000 feet, and it's basically almost vertical to get up there. And then it's, if that isn't bad enough, it's going through a whole bunch of blowdowns through an old burn. And so it's really a butt kicker getting up there. And I'd be remiss, I didn't mention, so in addition to Levi, Corey Beckendorf was there along with us for the bulk of the hunt. He had to leave at one point to go back to work, but he was in there for, you know, a little over a week to help call. And we never called in a bull the whole time. It was, you know, we tried everything, bugles, cow calls, raking, the whole works. And it was another, you know, frustrating element to the hunt there, where normally we're able to, you know, at least get some bulls over the course of that period of time there to respond. This was not the case. And then also, if I remember correctly, it was real dry up there this year. And like we hiked all the way up back in there to that basin, and it was where the previous year I'd gotten into tons of elk in there. It was void of elk there this time. So pretty frustrating to put in that much effort. And we actually made two trips up there because I just couldn't believe that it was, you know, there was void of animals. So I had to go back up there to prove it to myself again. And took Corey and Levi on quite the walkabout, because the second time we went all the way to the head of the main canyon and looped around rather than going straight up to it. And Levi didn't like that that hike. He basically knew it was futile, even though I was hell-bent on going. So he let me know he didn't like that idea.
Yeah, he was a kind of little bitch. He was funny at the end of the day, but I mean, and I'm sure he'll listen to this, so love you, Levi, but he's definitely more of a whitetail fit, kind of a lower land hunter. He can hunt higher, but I don't know that he's happy about it, I guess. I would say he's not real thrilled when you're like, okay, we're gonna have to cross over that summit. I think he's thinking, fuck you, South, is what I'm thinking he's thinking, from what I saw, anyway.
I think he took the words right out of his mouth. Yeah.
He is a funny little guy at the end of the night, though. But, yeah, I don't think he was thrilled.
Yeah, I love Levi to death. Great person and really fun to share a camp with. But the high elevation, you know, mule deer and elk hunting is not he doesn't have the same passion as he does for turkeys, wild waterfowl and whitetails for sure. But to his credit, you know, he did go everywhere I did and kept up just fine. It's just he didn't do it necessarily with a smile on his face the whole time. So it's unfortunate that he doesn't share the same passion, because he's a very talented cameraman. And man, that dude has got some eyeballs on him. I wish I could pick up animals as well as he does. It's disheartening when you're sitting there, you know, side by side, and you're looking through binoculars and he's looking naked eye and picking stuff out that I'm not seeing with binoculars, man. It's humbling, to say the least.
Yeah, I'd be willing to say I think he's probably got the best eyeballs of anybody that I've ever hunted with. You know, not glassing per se, but like just straight vision. Never seen anything like it I that I could remember. And it's just, I mean, whatever happened with that, you know, chromosome DNA, there's things he can see. Like you said, I had binos, and I'm like, dude, I still don't see it. And which is pretty, pretty amazing.
Right. Yeah. It's not fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really
exactly.
Just not fair.
Yeah. But
yeah. Which makes it just that much more frustrating that, you know, that he's not into that high country stuff. Cause that kind of, you know, natural ability I would give body parts to have it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I would say that, you know, as far as like with, you know, the mountain hunting or whatever, you know, obviously if you're like sheep hunting and behind glass or whatever, but I mean, that's been one of my larger problems. And they, you know, as far as like a downfall, other than just being a dummy or, you know, too much pressure, is vision wise is just not something, you know, that's something I kind of struggle with at times, where, you know, whether that be a tine, and I'm saying that just with my eyes, not with glass, that has been something where it has saved a lot of animals' lives, where I just didn't pick something out I probably should have, or Levi definitely would be picking out.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say my major fault for elk hunting is being overly aggressive and overrunning things. I have a hell of a time picking up, like, or pinpointing where, you know, that sound of the bugle is coming from. I always think it's further away than what it is. And I have overrun my target on quite a number of occasions and tried to do better with that this last year than I did the previous year. The previous year, I blew out a lot of bulls by, you know, going in too fast or not hitting the brakes early enough, thinking that the bull was another 100 or, you know, so yards further away than it was and you know, end up bumping into him when it was, you know, I should have been going in a lot slower. So frustrating lesson to learn there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously this year was even worse, more so, meaning this year it seemed like you, once you bumped them, they were a lot more cautious than normal. But I had a couple opportunities, one decent enough one that just didn't pan out, but you had a lot better luck literally just going in on your own, no calling whatsoever. And you did end up getting a shot, which unfortunately you forgot not to bring up bullshit. You forgot to turn the GoPro on, but what happened with that specific? Cause that sounded like something, you know, it's going to be etched in your mind the rest of your life.
You know, there's no doubt about it, man. So the last day that we hunted, I went in, but Levi had actually packed out, and Corey had left several days earlier to go back to work. And so I was, you know, hunting solo, and I had my GoPro and, made just a rookie, you know, camera guy error with the GoPro. When you turn them on, when you first turn it on, it takes several seconds to power up. And, I'll just kind of explain the mistake I made. Then I'll backtrack as far as to how the day went prior to that. But the, when you first turn it on, it takes a few seconds to power up before you can push the record button. And, I had just gotten, a little impatient and pushed the record button too early and thought I was recording when, in fact, the camera was still powering up. But that day I left camp by myself, went up towards the head of the canyon, and to fast forward, I got on six bulls and got winded by every single one of them up until that was the last day, but the bull that I'm merging two different days together. The day that I got on that bull, was Corey and Levi were still both, you know, in camp, and I had separated from them to make a stalk on a bull. That's right. In fact, it was that same bull that you had stalked way up near where I put that trail camera. So now I'm getting my story. We should have probably recorded this 6 months ago. Things would have been a little fresher in my mind.
Possibly. Yeah, no kidding, right? I've been fortunate to work with many great companies in the outdoor industry, but the people over at Born Primitive Outdoor are definitely on the top of the list. All veterans donate a bunch of money into veterans organizations, and other than Bear Hanlon's hair, which he probably should get cut, I can't really say anything but negative about him. Bruno, who also works for Born Primitive Tactical, he has no hair, so I'm wondering, maybe you guys email in, donate some money, we can cut Bear's hair, glue it on Bruno. Kurt, on the other hand, perfect hair. Check him out, Born Primitive Outdoor. Anybody that's followed along with me for the last couple years knows I've really been using and promoting Spartan Forge, the mapping software. The owner, Bill, who I must say is a pipe-hitting dork, does all of the coding and things like that for Spartan Forge. He's also a military veteran. If you get lost really easy, I also suggest this. They have a Blue Force tracker, so maybe I can come find you. If you get drunk and can't find your way home, you can hit the beacon. There's a lot of positive things, not just about hunting and weather, about Spartan Forge. So check it out. Amazing product, owned by veterans, good dudes. I'm sure some of you have seen the speakers that are in my garage, where it's on video or if you've come over to the house, but those are Demerbox speakers. They're waterproof, very durable. It's basically a Pelican case with speakers inside. The battery, the charge lasts for a long time. Sound quality is amazing. Again, waterproof. I throw it in my truck, keep them in my garage, throw them outside when I'm working out and shooting. But a product that I can stand behind, as well as the people that own and operate the company. So Demerbox, take a look.
So I was making a run at that bull. What had happened is midday, we had left camp. Levi, Corey and I, and we had left camp. We had gotten on a couple of other bulls, but got winded by them. And then we went up to the head of this little side, side creek kind of that fed down into the main creek in the main canyon. And we had stopped and we were, built a little fire to dry out and eat lunch. And cause it had been raining, we got all of our, you know, clothes were somewhat wet there. And, there was a bull right across the creek up canyon from us that had, was bedded, and we could hear him bugling periodically. And so finally I just couldn't take it any longer. And I told those guys, okay, just wait here. I'll just run over there real quick. Right. And so I left my backpack, left everything essentially, except for my bow and the GoPro. And I went side hill across at that bull and was stalking in on him. I figure I was probably within 50 to 60 yards of where I figured this bull was. And then there was a cow and a calf that were bedded behind a stump that I wasn't aware of. And I got within probably 10 yards of them. And then the wind got me on them and they blew out. And I took off side hill running up canyon, which of course then pushed the whole rest of the herd of elk and the bull. And I decided, heck with it. I'm going to see if I can catch up with this bull because he's, you know, he doesn't know what happened. He just knows that this, you know, one of the elk that was in there blew out. So I figured, man, maybe I can catch up to him. Well, I ended up going, chasing that bull side hill all the way, up to the head of the canyon. And in that process, I bumped into another herd, that had several satellites in there. And one of them was probably a 300 class bull, maybe a 6 point or something. No, he was definitely a six. I got him on my GoPro, but probably in that 3 to 310 range, somewhere in there. And I thought I was going to get a shot at him. I got to within maybe 50 yards of him, but just never got that next, 10 to 20 yards that I needed to be able to get in range. Then he kind of split off and went up canyon. So I peeled off, dropped down into the bottom of the canyon and kept after him. And then I ended up all the way up kind of in the basin there at the head of the canyon. And then I heard a bull across the creek at the head of the canyon bugling. And I was kind of in the timber on the right side there. And as I glassed, I could see this 6 point. And he was probably like a 280 class 6 point. And he was at the head of the canyon. It's very sparse. There's like a lot of like Christmas tree sized trees that are in there, but it's pretty open. Not what you'd stereotype as elk habitat, at least not something that hang out, in the middle of the day. But this guy was kind of fired up, and there was a bull that he had was trying to come to that was on my side of the canyon there. And so I decided to make a beeline towards him. And that's when I turned the camera on. I was maybe 150 yards from him. I figured, oh, man, I'm just going to leave the camera running this whole time. Well, that's when I powered up the camera and hit record before it had completely powered up. And that bull he turned and started going downstream about that time that I had taken off after him. Another bull up on the side of the hill on the opposite side of the canyon from me started bugling, and he was bugling back and forth to that 286 that I was after. And he started coming down closer, and he was a little bit bigger of a bull, probably in the 290-ish range, maybe starting to get closer to 300. And so that smaller bull started working his way downstream. I was running directly towards them, dropped into the creek bottom. It's kind of a dry creek wash up there at that high up the canyon. And meanwhile, those two bulls are starting to kind of parallel the creek bottom. And when that bigger bull caught up with the smaller one, there was a good sized clump of these jack pines. And the two of them were kind of had faced off. By this time, I had gotten about parallel as far as elevation in the creek bottom with them. So I got up out of the wash, lined up a couple of these jack pines between us, between me and the two bulls, and then I just ran straight at them as they were preoccupied, you know, posing, kind of posturing there. And they locked up once, and then the smaller bull turned and started walking downstream a little bit more and a little bit away from me. Meanwhile, I'd gotten to the edge of this stand of jack pines, and the bigger bull was walking towards the smaller one. At this point, they're about 50 yards from me, and I'm at the last jack pine between me and the bulls. It's all open space. And then that smaller bull all of a sudden just turns and starts walking directly towards me. And he's like, you know, 50, 40, 30, and, you know, 20. And then at about 15 yards, he turns broadside. I think it's like, dude, this bull's going to come start raking on the tree that I'm standing behind. It's the only thing that I could think. And the bigger six had turned and was walking side by side with that smaller bull, but the bigger one was more screened behind the jack pine that I was standing behind. And at about 15 yards or so, that the smaller bull turned broadside to that the bigger bull, and they're posturing. And all I could think was of this situation the previous year where I had two like 330 to 340 class bulls turn broadside to me, but they were at about 50 yards, 45 to 50 yards. And they had locked up, and several times I was on these bulls right before last light. And then the wind ended up getting me. And all I could think of was that situation where, you know, I had almost been able to get a shot at those two big bulls the previous year. And so here I have this barn door size elk standing broadside to me at about 15 yards. No idea that I'm anywhere in the country, totally preoccupied by the larger bull right in front of him. And I'd already made up my mind. It didn't matter to me which bull I got a shot opportunity. Whichever one presented the shot first, I was going to be totally happy with shooting the smaller one or the bigger one. And so I pulled back and focused, you know, right there behind the shoulder, cut my shot, and I hit him right in the elbow. I mean, dude, an elk broadside at 15 yards seems like an impossible target. Well, I didn't miss him, but I didn't, you know, it's like I hit him in the one spot where you can't hit him with a trad bow. And I mean, it was just sick. My arrow just goes, basically penetrated probably the distance of the broadhead was it. I had dropped my draw weight down. I was only shooting 43 pounds because I had messed my shoulder up later, you know, in late summer there. So I wasn't able to shoot the 50 pounds that I normally do. So I hit this bull. He runs, turns and runs off, but he stopped on the other side. He ran past where I'd seen him at 50 yards where he had turned and started coming back to me. There was a little screen of trees, and he ran to the other side of those. So I took off running after him to try to get a follow-up shot. And I could see the tops of his antlers, and I got to within, oh, I don't know, maybe 20 yards or so of him, but I had no shot because of the trees. But I could see if he continued going in the direction he was pointed, that I was going to have an opening at about 35 yards that I would be able to get a shot. And sure enough, he starts working his way towards that opening. And I drew back, and as soon as he got into that opening, I shot, and I thought I 10-ringed him on that follow-up shot. But I think what happened was I probably hit the ribs at a steep angle, and the arrow, rather than penetrating, went, you know, behind the shoulder, but between the shoulder and the body cavity. That's the only thing I can think, because I got an incredible blood trail. I left him there, and I hiked all the way back. It was over a mile that I had been chasing this bull up the canyon, but I went back, got Levi and Corey, and then we came back and blood trailed that bull. I think it was over 700 yards that we trailed that bull, and somewhere around, I think it was the 500 yard mark, somewhere in there, we found my arrow, and at that point the blood stopped. At first it was a pretty decent blood trail, and then it got progressively less and less and less until he spit the arrow, and then the blood trail was pretty much non-existent. We ended up bumping him at around 700 yards from where I'd hit him, and there was one spot of blood in the bed where he was laid up, and sadly I think it was just one of those non-fatal shots. I mean, it was two non-fatal shots, because clearly 700 yards later, and I think it was probably a good 4 or 5 hours after I had initially hit him when we jumped him up out of his bed. It was right at last light. And I was high as a kite. I was like, man, you guys aren't going to believe the footage I got. And I got this bull. And I mean, we overcome all these challenges with the swirling winds, and I was just on cloud nine. And then when we didn't find him, and then to add insult to injury, I didn't get the record button hit properly. It was so frustrating, man. I was just down in the dumps, to say the least.
So I can't remember where I was at, but if I remember right, I was getting my ass whooped at a very high altitude. And with the first message you had sent me, I think, and I can't remember how that exactly worked, if it was on InReach.
Yeah.
Because you had said you had hit a bull, and I was like, thank God someone got one. Like, finally. And then, we got back, and then I cried on my pillow, because you didn't end up, you're like, yeah, it's not looking, good or whatever.
Yeah.
And I had hit one, I think, on day two. We called one off, big point, kind of like, they were basically just off the top on a bench, and we called them down into the there was kind of a draw. We called the bull in, and we raked him in. Steven was raking, and the bull came in, was just going crazy. The bull kind of came in silent on his way down once he had committed, and he came to the opening where I went to full draw, and Steven could not see at the angle that he was there looking at Steven. And then Steven went to rake again right when I shot. And, I mean, I hit him, but I was like, we waited a few hours. I had no idea exactly where I hit him. When he spun, we could see my fletch in the trees, but you couldn't really tell. You couldn't tell exactly where I'd hit. And he went straight up for 300 probably yards, if not more, over the top, grabbed his cows. And I'm like, well, this elk is marked as, safe. So that was like my first experience of crying on my pillow. And then it was kind of an ass whooping for the next 3-4 days. And then that's what I think when you got into that, was that like day 5 or 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there?
Yeah. Yeah. It was before Corey left, shortly before he left. I think Corey was in there for about a week. So, I think that was about right. I mean, we had basically got to the point where we had all but given up on calling at that point. And that's why I had gone in on that bull solo. Cause we just, calling had been so futile, and I don't know whether, it was a result of the amount of hunting pressure that had been in there the several weeks prior to us showing up. Cause that was just the bow hunters we knew of, cause this was post muzzleloader season, and who knows what kind of muzzleloading hunting pressure there had been in there. Also, those were just the bow hunters that we were aware of, so it could have been even worse, but it seemed like it just was really stirred up last year, and I'm hoping that this coming year will be better from a pressure standpoint.
Yeah for sure, it would be nice. And then I don't know, since nobody knows exactly what we're talking about except people that aren't going to draw again, We went up a little bit farther, which after about 2 days, because we were going back and forth on to go up farther or not. And I mean, this is how the hunting guide works. This year, we 100% should have went up farther because I don't think it would have affected anything. Next year, we'll do that, and they'll probably be blowing elk out left and right, already. I will say, though, it would probably help you more if we went up farther, if it kind of repeated itself, because your ass was hiking fucking far every, like, literally, I'm like, huh, I really don't want to go this morning with South, but I guess I will, because it's, what, 4 miles up that canyon to the end of it? 4.5?
Yeah. Yeah, just to the, it's four, I think, just to the mouth of the canyon there, and then you know that canyon's long. Even when you get to the bottom end of the meadow there, it goes up a long ways beyond that. But basically, I think it's four to kind of where you'd start hunting, although you're passing a lot of good hunting area along the way there as well. I'm torn about it because, like you said, you know, we moved up, camped further up than that whole area that we would normally be commuting through could be loaded with elk next year, because I've seen it loaded with elk in years past. It's just last year it was pretty much void of activity. It was kind of a weird year.
Yeah, super weird. And I mean, I don't know, you know, it's always, how do they put this? When you ever talk about something, and no matter that might be, you went for a run, you built a bow, you shot an elk, you went elk hunting, you know, everyone, you know, you fucked up, right? You did something wrong. This is what I would have done. I don't know that I would have done anything different this year. And I guess what I'm saying is, like, when people were replying back, not necessarily in a negative way, just like, oh, did you try this? Or, dude, we tried everything. I mean, yeah. I'd be like, okay, cow call. Elk would take off. Stand at 100 yards, look at me like, well, you know, they were just smarter. Like, I don't know. Would you have done anything different?
Yeah, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, the only thing that I think that we could have done, that I could personally have done different or better, would have been to been hunting solo from day one. And that's only because of the benefit of hindsight, you know, that just the calling wasn't working. But you know, the reality was we were trying to call in a bull to get it on video, but it just did not work last year. And the most success that I had was that last day. And it's hardly successful when you blow out six bulls getting winded by every one of them. But the reality is that I got the most opportunities or got the closest to bulls on that last day, by hunting solo. And I think less scent in the air, even though it didn't help ultimately because I did spook every one of them. But I was able to get, you know, the most almost by going solo on that last day. But, you know, if you're trying to get video, it definitely is not as compelling to have just, you know, all GoPro footage and no, you know, no DSLR footage from a camera guy. So I really don't know. You know, considering that goal in mind, I don't know that we could have done anything different and better. But as far as if the ultimate goal was just to kill an elk solo, going in silent, you know, stalking the bugle, I think would have been the best chance to notch a tag.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, when I say that, when I say solo, even if somebody's 200 yards back, I consider you're going in solo, just keeping them making noise. Once you got into that 150, 100 yard or closer range, I mean, there was a few times we put pretty solid effort into that one patch of timber above camp. It's a horrible hike to get in there, you know, after they bedded with the wind, you know, coming up and, you know, sneaking in as close as we could and then just mildly cow calling. Yep, they didn't like that. Nope. So maybe I'm a crappy cow caller. And then, all right, well, let's see if we can, you know, get within 100 or 80. We got to 68 and we just couldn't get a shot. So I'm like, well, let's bugle. Maybe he'll just charge me. No, it went out the same way. And the next time I'm like, okay, I'm going to stalk all the way through. Yeah, I just blew him out because there was just too many eyeballs. So maybe if I was a better stalker, but I literally was like, I don't think I can climb up this hill again and take that kind of depression. Like, this is whooping my ass. And I just generally, you know, I don't normally, I mean, with a compound, especially in my hand, after a week, something should have happened. It was one of the biggest butt kickings I've got elk hunting. It was wild. And, you know, it was amazing, always amazing being back there, but holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, as we're talking here, I was thinking more about it. I think a lot of last year was due to hunting pressure. Because I know that guy that sent me the picture on IG, he was hunting that same hillside that you spent most of the time in that canyon. And because, you know, that's where that arrow was that he sent me the picture of. And then he ended up killing that bull up on that same side hill, too. So he had been in there for a week, you know, beginning of the season. And then he had gone back in there again. And I'm not sure how many days he spent up there on that hillside before he tagged out there, before we got in there. But you know, that's a fair amount of hunting pressure. And then those Amish guys, you know, with a dozen horses, I'm sure they're crawling all over that main canyon there. And then the guy from Tennessee, I think he was back there for 2 weeks before he, you know, had to go back home. So that's a, you know, while it's a pretty good size area on paper, when you get that many people in there for that many total hunting days, and then the two of us in there running around for 10 days combined, that's a lot of pressure on elk. And I'm sure a lot of elk that winded hunters with as bad as those winds were swirling over the course of those total number of hunter days.
Yeah, no. And I think that anytime I complain about something like this, I'm not necessarily complaining. This is just what happened. And I'm licking my wounds, because I don't want people to think that you or me are not grateful, obviously,
sure,
for what we had. But it was a butt kicking. And, you know, the one thing too, like, when you're in there and this is going on or whatever, is like, okay, like we said, what would we do different? Okay. Is it mm-hmm. one of those things you would have been smarter and just sat still? One, I can't do that, not that long. And the wind is so bad in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that you could kill anything off a water hole unless it was just blind shithouse luck.
Yeah. You know, and to circle back around to your comment there a moment ago about, you know, complaining or whatever, I think it's important, you know, just to, so this is a high point unit, and it's a really hard unit to find landowner vouchers. So there's not a lot of them available. So most of the people who do get a chance to hunt this unit are going to be burning, you know, 14 or 15 points as a non-resident, and, you know, somewhere probably north of half of that for a resident. And I think it's just, you know, important to share the experiences that we had, so that if you are going to put in for this hunt, that you're not thinking you're going to be the only person in that unit with a tag, and it's going to be, you know, like hunting Estes Park with no other hunting pressure, because it, you know, it is public land. There are other hunters in there, and they're, you know, granted not near as many, but when you're, you know, 10, 12 miles or 14 miles back in there, you really don't expect to see other people. And I know that, you know, having talked to other people who have hunted this unit, and some who have hunted it from the road system and who have had really good hunts from a truck camp, you know, maybe going 10, 12 miles back in isn't necessarily the best answer. It might be being more mobile and being closer to roads where you can bounce around and you're not married to, you know, one canyon because you're so far back in there and you're limited to, you know, you're kind of tethered to your base camp by how far you can go on foot on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I mean, adding to that, you and I can go pretty damn far from base camp. Like, we're both willing and able to do, I mean, at times it seems like probably dumber this shit than we even should have been doing. You specifically, a couple times, climbing what you climbed, because I climbed up there the one time, and dude, that's a horrible climb. I mean, it's good exercise, but Jesus. It's rough. But like you said, with what you said, I would make sure people understand, like, South and I have been in there many, well, I say many, I've been in there a few, South's been in there a few more than me. Very high point draw unit. I would consider South and I fairly skilled hunters, decent enough, right? We're pretty successful normally and still got our ass beat. So it can happen when you turn in those points. That is something for people to really think about, whether you're turning in 7, 12, 15, 18. You know, I could have killed the elk. I had a compound. I mean, I could have killed one of the stick, but not a big elk. Not the elk you put in 14 points for in most people's opinions. You know what I mean? I had a couple right. smaller, you know, three-year-olds that I definitely could have shot, and definitely a couple of those with a stick. But, yeah, I think sometimes, like you said, people put those – whether they're following along on the tag allocation or the apps that you can get or whatever, it's not a gimme. It's never a gimme. And we had a lot of things in our favor, and we're both eating tag soup. So,
yeah, that's a tough one to swallow, you know, right there, because you almost, you know, you put in with 14 points or so, and you almost think that that is going to be a notched, you know, a tag automatically, and that the elk still are elk, and they're not going to, you know, voluntarily tip over for you, unfortunately. And when you have like this last year, a storm came in and rained and snowed pretty much the whole muzzleloader hunt. And if you put in, I don't know how many points it takes for a muzzleloader tag, but I imagine it's probably similar, if not more, than an archery voucher. And if you got, you know, stormed on the whole duration of your hunt, man, that is just a tough run of luck. And for us, we were back in there. We weren't dealing with that kind of weather, but our hunt got cut short because of a storm that was coming in. But we were dealing with, you know, Mother Nature in swirling winds and just a different capacity, which can be just as, you know, damaging as a storm front moving in. But, you know, just for a kind of a reality check, I guess, is what I just wanted to share for people that, you know, have a whole bunch of bonus points or preference points they're sitting on. And, you know, contemplating what they want to do with them. When it's good, holy cow, it's awesome. But when you have, you know, inclement weather, as in what happened to the guys with the muzzleloader tags, or that were archery hunting during the muzzleloader hunt, because you're still contending with the same thing then, or if you just happen to have a bunch of hunting pressure, because that's the thing with a draw tag like that. One year it might be totally dead, there's nobody in there and you're the only person, and then the next year just randomly, you know, because you're not typically going back in year after year, as in a spot that you'd be able to go to on an over-the-counter tag, just randomly, you know, the guy that draws it cashes in his 14 points and's got to pick out a spot on the map, happens to end up in the canyon that you are in, or several guys randomly pick that out, then it's just, you know, you got to contend with it just like you do on an OTC tag.
Yeah, no, that's a fact. So, well, I really, like, I wish we would have done this a while ago, but I kept hunting after the, you know, the podcast, or after the season. And then honestly too, I was just depressed and didn't want to talk about it. I had so many people, "You gonna do a podcast?" I'm like, "No, I don't want to right now. I'm still crying. Like,
still suffering from PTSD.
Oh fuck. Yeah, it was crazy. But it's always good to be, you know, always good to be in the woods and, you know, elk screaming and everything else. And then, you know, this year, obviously, at least, you know, if it's the same kind of, you know, vibe this year, like, it may be like with the whole, the hang back and just stalk in thing. It's like, it's cool to get, you know, video for people and everything, but man, I like eating elk. And so it's like, yeah, you know what? We're going to have to deal with some GoPro footage and some really high quality camp footage and, you know, hiking in. But man, for me, I don't have, after two or three tries, if it's like not conducive to get on film, I'm not great at taking one for the team. I'm like, yeah, fuck that. I'm shooting an elk. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think I'm a little more dedicated to the camera than you are there. But even towards the end of the hunt there, I was willing to cash it in and just try to get something on the ground. I think that, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, the only, like, next year, what my plan is, I think I'll take the low-hanging fruit opportunities first as far as going up the main canyon, and I know that area really well. But what I learned from last year, having gone up onto the top of the ridge to the top of the mountain there a couple of times, it seems like up there on the top of the ridge seems to be like the most consistent wind, where it's, you know, whipping kind of down canyon at a pretty good clip there. And I thought about doing a bivouac hunt, going hiking back towards the trailhead a couple of miles and then straight up out of the canyon to get, you know, to where I'm on the downwind side, and then have a spike camp on the downwind side of those basins up there, and then try to hunt them going, you know, upwind into those. Because the problem where I take off from camp is I'm ending up in those basins, and in one basin and then upwind of the second basin, which I saw some bulls in that second basin this year that I hadn't ventured into in prior years. So I just, you know, was kind of thinking about it during the off season. I may try to spike out up there, but man, what a butt kicker to go from, you know, the river bottom or creek bottom elevation, fighting those aspens and blowdowns and deadfall and stuff to get all the way up to the top there. But, you know, if we end up with a similar situation next year, then I think that might be a plan B or C or D or E for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the other thing too, well, I think I'm going to bring a much happier, larger base camp shelter, and then a much better lightweight head out from base camp system, yep. You know, for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to do better with my food last year. I've been packing in too many processed foods and you know, that's the easiest thing to do because they're so available, just grabbing them off the shelf. But I got to bring in more whole foods next year, or this year rather. And that's going to be a focus of mine, is really working on kind of tuning up my food bags for this coming year and getting some higher quality calories in there.
Yeah, for being packed in on horseback, I did not do as nearly as well as I should have on the food side of things. Cause I mean, I kind of treated it. I did not. Anyway, I'm in agreement with you, cause I definitely could be eating better when I'm back there and just was lazy, I guess. But well, dude, either way, I appreciate, you know, obviously the friendship, you coming on and everything else, but it is fun being back there with you. So it is always a pleasure, even though we both came out of there beat like a government mule, it was still fun.
Yeah, that's the truth, man. I tell you, I admire the effort you were able to put in considering the 6 weeks in BC. I mean, in one sense, that got you primed for, you know, an elk hunt, but it would have been probably better if you had had a full week to recuperate before you went back in there, because I know how it is coming off the tail end of a wilderness hunt, man. You beat to tar. But the nice thing about, you know, having one 10-day hunt is that you can really hold the pedal to the metal a lot more. But if you're coming off the heels of a month and a half of being in the mountains carrying the kind of weight and the packs you did, you know, and hauling out, you know, dead goats and sheep and stuff, man, it beat you up.
Yeah, it did. No, believe me, a few times, I mean, I think twice. Once for sure. No, yeah, one. I mean, you were going to the end, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to sleep in today. Like, I got out of bed at like 7:30 and went and washed up and just chilled, because I'm like, man, I just do not have it in me, which isn't normally like me, but I just, like, when I say have it in me, I just was, my body hurt. So yeah, but you know, hopefully this year, obviously a little bit different. But yeah, man, I appreciate it. So anybody wants to see the photos from, you know, our trophies from this year, just look at your tag. Cause we, did not shoot shit. Everybody keeps asking me, hey, where's your elk at? I'm like, shut up. Stop asking. That's not nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, before we drop completely off, I had one product announcement I wanted to make, and I had sent one to you. I got a new clicker. If you're shooting a stick bow and you shoot a clicker, a string clicker, I've got a kind of a new twist on a design for it. One of the shortcomings of shooting a clicker is if you catch your string on a branch or something like that while you're out hunting, you end up hyper extending the blade on your clicker and it doesn't end up, you know, it won't click any longer. So you lose that function of that draw check. And so I came up with a method of, you know, being able to quickly replace the blade on it without having to untie your string end that gets tied into your string. So you can change out and replace your clicker blade in probably just a couple of minutes there. And I just was speaking with the manufacturer and they're supposed to be shipping here in a few days. So by the end of April, end of the first week of April, I'm hoping to have those. So I got to make some tags for, you know, labels and stuff for them. So hopefully by mid-April, I'll be able to ship them. I'll have some more information up on my Instagram page once those are available. But definitely a game changer if you're shooting a clicker, because that's one of the drawbacks of them is if you're out there in the field and you bend your blade, which I've done on an elk hunt. Literally, I had a massive 350 class bull that I botched a shot at about 10 years ago I was shooting a clicker, had bent the blade the day before and didn't repair it. And I had a shot opportunity and without the assistance of the clicker, I really don't know where I was at in my draw cycle when I released that arrow.
That'll happen with big elk. And I should have a video up on our YouTube page as well, just going over kind of what's in the package with it, but also how I installed it and kind of the difference. Cause I have a couple other, you know, clickers that I'll kind of show that you'll be able to see kind of compared against, like the Cricket and the Clickety, I don't know, something I got on Amazon. Anyway, you'll be able to see kind of the difference, the noise between them, and then that adjustability that South was talking about. And that should be up fairly soon.
Right on. Good deal. All right. Well, I'll talk to you again here shortly. We'll talk about that bow with heavier limbs that you need and figure things out, man. Glad to see you shooting a stick again. I'm sure all the other boyers across the traditional archery industry will appreciate it as well. Oh, incidentally, before I sign you off, it was pretty funny. I don't know if you saw this, and I hate calling anybody out specifically, you know, on a Facebook post there, people that make dumb statements, but I got a pretty serious chuckle when I saw there was a post up about Kafaru, and somebody had posted up that you went back to shooting a stick bow because you needed the trad guys to be buying Kafaru backpacks.
Oh, I did not see that, but that's that's funny.
The logic in that was just like if you were going to be choosing a weapon to be hunting with to generate more sales, more backpack sales, you'd be picking up a gun. And because the overwhelming number of hunters are gun hunters and the vast minority of hunters are shooting a stick bow.
Yeah, it's pretty substantial. And I am never surprised now with what I read.
The wisdom on social media.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, whatever, obviously. So somebody that didn't like me, cause I've heard recently, you know, we sold to the Chinese and I'm not involved with the company and I don't know, a bunch of other stuff. And then the stick bow thing, I just don't think people realize how my brain works. Probably like I constantly have to be challenged, or when I say challenged, like the compound was fun again. It was great. I mean, I like shooting a compound. you know, and then recently the stick, I'm like, man, I'm having fun shooting the stick bow. And people are different. The business is not hinging. While I do appreciate your business, the business is not hinging on trad guys, because I would be willing to bet it is less than 1% of our sales. It might be a fraction of 1% would be stick bow guys. And I love stick bow guys. I appreciate you buying the products. But, man, you know, there's smaller numbers. So, yeah, you're right. I'd shoot a gun. If I needed to, I'd be shooting a gun. There's far more. And I'd probably take up duck hunting. And some other shit too, if it was just about people buying my pack.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, too funny.
Well, cool, man. Right on. Thank you again. I appreciate it.
Yep, sure thing. Good to talk to you.
Yep, you too.
All right, later.